Welcome to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. My name is Dave Jeffrey, and in the studio with me today is Virginia Collins. Hi, Virginia. How are you doing?
Hello, Dave. How are you? I'm very well. So on today's program, we're going to be looking at reverse mortgage. We'll also look at a couple of health items, staying younger for longer. And if we have time, we'll look also at downsizing and keeping the pension. But before we get onto those, my son said to me earlier this week, "So, Mum, is it always like that, that you think you're younger than you are on the outside?" Yeah, it probably is.
He's a smart boy,
I think. He's a very smart boy. So I then went on to the Council of the Aging newsletter, and I found an article by Gregory Allen who looks at the signs that tell you that you have become a senior. So other than the inevitable progress of time and the appearance of grey hair, how do we know we are old, mature, or a senior? I'm sure we all remember the first time we were endowed with the adjective old or mature, or entered into the brethren of senior Australians by a well-meaning service provider. While there are a plethora of advantages to growing older and gaining awareness of that fact, the first few times your ageing status is reflected back can be confronting. I've been faced with this new dawning of my ageing in diverse ways. In shops, I have become Sir or Mister, which is fine if the intention is to show respect, but the intonation was more like a condescending, "How can I help you, dear?" In no particular order of degree of surprise, let me share one week's experience. On the bus, a young woman offered me her seat. I think she was pregnant. The barber offered to trim my eyebrows and advised me that I have a good head of hair for my age. The cafe staff gave me a senior's discount without asking, and the checkout person at Bunnings notified me of the senior's day on Wednesdays. All good and beneficial encounters, but why was I confronted? Do I view being identified as ageing as an insult rather than a mere milestone in life's journey? It's simple. At 60, I hadn't viewed myself as projecting an image of an older community member. Through later introspection, I realised that I was carrying a negative and outdated view of what being older was. Eventually, you will reach a point when you stop lying about your age and start bragging about it. But I'm not that mature yet. I think we all have our 30-something voice in our head and carry our 40-something appearance in our mind's eye, but I've learnt that it's not only a mirror or reflective surface that reminds us of our age. It can also be a well-placed adjective. And that was from the newsletter from the Council of the Aging 2019 in August. And it was by Gregory Allen, who is a longtime member of the Council of the Aging.
Fabulous. That was an excellent article, Virginia. And I want you to congratulate your son for bringing it up because, really, on the serious side, isn't it? We all of a sudden, people start to call us sir and the barber does your eyebrows and
Absolutely.
Says you've got a good head of hair for your age.
The only good point of it, when my son brought it up, he said, "And I feel the same. I still think I'm 20.
He's a tactful, diplomatic boy, I've got to say. Thank you for that. With Optimal Life on the RPH Network.
Reverse mortgage is one of today's subjects, and this particular article comes from The Telegraph on the 22nd of July this year, and it's written by John Collett, "Reverse Mortgage Loan Scheme Open for Seniors." So cash-poor property-owning retirees will be able to apply for the federal government's expanded pension loan scheme, a reverse mortgage, in which borrowed cash can be repaid out of the proceeds of an eventual sale of a property. The expanded scheme will be available to almost anyone who owns property outright and is of pension age, or has a partner of a pension age, including those who are not picking up any age pension. Well, over a million people. The pension age is being gradually increased from 65 to 67 years, depending on date of birth. The existing pension loan scheme, which has been running for about 30 years, is narrow in scope, and the uptake from pensioners has been low. In last year's federal budget, the coalition government announced it would expand the scheme so it can be accessed by a far greater number of pensioners. To qualify, you or your partner have to be at least age pension age, own your own home outright or own an investment property outright, have adequate insurance covering the secured real estate, and not be a bankrupt or subject to a personal insolvency agreement. Those who meet the criteria can apply to receive an income stream of up to 1.5 times the maximum rate of the age pension each fortnight. For example, a single person who meets the criteria and is receiving the full pension plus supplements of about $24,000 a year will be able to draw another $12,000, taking their total annual cash flow to about $36,000. The loan is paid as an income stream each fortnight and cannot be taken as a lump sum. The debt bills as the loan funds are drawn down and as no repayments are made. The interest is capitalised and the debt bills quickly. Money freed up from downsizing would count under the assets test for the age pension, whereas income from the pension loan scheme does not count under the income test. The scheme could be a good option, particularly for older retirees whose savings are running down but want to keep a certain level of cash on hand. So that was by John Collett in The Telegraph on the 22nd of July.
Thanks, Virginia. We're going to change pace a little now and go to puppy love. How man's best friend actually tricks us. It's from Washington. If you've ever fallen for the old puppy dog eyes trick, well, don't feel bad. A new study has found that dogs evolve new facial muscles specifically to tug at our heartstrings. It's taken thousands of years to evolve. Unlike wolves, dogs have muscles responsible for raising the inner eyebrow, and it's specifically for facial communication with humans. Well, this is according to new research published in the peer-reviewed Proceedings in National Academy magazine. It says the movement makes the eyes appear bigger, hence more infant-like and potentially more appealing to humans. The report goes on to say, this inner brow raises almost resembles a facial movement of humans. It produces when they're sad, potentially eliciting a nurturing response. Researchers have studied the facial muscles of four wolves and two dogs. They found the domesticated dogs all had eyebrow-raising muscles. This is the anguli oculi medial muscle. Wolves do not have this, and it's not anywhere near as developed in what they do. All other facial muscles around the eyes were the same across the species, except for the retractor anguli oculi lateralis muscle. It pulls the corners of the eyelids towards the ears. The muscle was less prominent in wolves, but present in all dogs except the Siberian Husky. Now, the Siberian Husky is more closely related to wolves than other breeds. During 33,000 years since dogs were domesticated, humans unconsciously or consciously cared more for dogs that exaggerated eyebrow movements. This allowed the muscle to evolve in their favour, the study said. So there you are, Virginia. Be careful of the old puppy love trick.
Oh, yes, but you can't help but fall for them.
I know. It's, they've got it down to a fine art. Taken 33,000 years.
Yes, well, they should by now. So we're going to, as promised, look at some health matters. And the following is taken from the ABC's science page. And they have a number of items that look at how to help the brain. This item is younger for longer body. Exercise also promotes the release of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a bit like a fertilizer for the brain. It supports the growth of new neurons and increases neuroplasticity, making it easier for the brain to grow new connections between neurons. Exercise can be a powerful antidepressant because it helps counteract the decrease in neuroplasticity and neurogenesis observed in depression. Exercise also makes your brain release endorphins, the feel-good hormones, and endocannabinoids, which activate your brain's reward system and helps relieve pain. This is why you might feel so elated after a run. These brain chemicals are also responsible for the runner's high or second wind experienced during endurance exercise. So, what is the optimal amount of exercise? While varying types, intensities, and length of exercise have been studied, 30 minutes of aerobic exercise, think heart pumping, sweating, 5 times a week, is a great minimum level to work towards. If you are over the age of 60, as little as 10 minutes of exercise can make a significant difference in your brain function. Pretty amazing. And the recommendation is to watch Catalyst as Ian Henderson investigates what science has to say on how to keep your body younger for longer.
Virginia, do tell me more. Keeping your body healthier and younger for longer. Something that's going to interest us all. This is Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Now, we are very excited here at Optimal Life. We've got a sponsor for this program, a wonderful sponsor. It's the Seniors Rights Service. It is a free legal service available to all of us. Now, have a pen and paper ready, because in a moment we'll tell you the number and the website. But their advice includes consumer rights, human rights, elder abuse, financial exploitation, planning for later life. And I noticed the other day they even got a thing they'll help you with advice on nursing homes, getting into a nursing home, and perhaps more importantly, getting out of a nursing home and the financial and legal obligations involved. Seniors' Rights. Now, their number, 1-800-424-079. Or if you'd like to contact them on the net, it's seniorsrightsservice.org.au. And I'll come back and say that number again in a moment. Legal, advocacy, education, free and confidential. Your voice, your rights, seniors' rights. 1-800-424-079. You're listening to Optimal Life with Virginia Collins and Dave Jeffrey.
So the ABC Science page has got a whole lot more information about brain health, and not only doing exercises to stay younger and keep your brain healthy, but, for example, trying to boost your brain health with Sudoku, sugar, and even sex.
Well, something dear to my heart, because my brain needs a little something, and they sound pretty good.
Let's take a look at the evidence, or at least some of the evidence this week. Okay. Do you do cryptic crosswords in an attempt to boost your brain health? Or have you heard that omega-3, a sugar boost, or even getting busy in the bedroom is good for your grey matter? Let's take a look at some of the things we often hear are good for our brain, review the evidence, and bust a few myths along the way. So, Sudoku and crosswords. It's hard not to feel a little smug when we do a Sudoku or a crossword puzzle. After all, we've heard how good it is for our brains. Just like exercise builds muscles, brain games make our brains stronger. Right? Wrong. Neuroplasticity is the term that describes how the pathways and connections in the brain change through experience. When we practice something, the brain adapts, and we tend to become better at that skill. When you do Sudoku puzzles every day and you find you get faster, unfortunately, that doesn't mean you're getting any smarter. Your brain is simply getting more efficient at doing Sudoku. It doesn't mean you'll get better at finding your keys or writing essays. If there's a particular skill you want to improve, you're probably better off practicing that skill. So the verdict on Sudoku and crosswords? Nah, not really.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, because I'm absolutely hopeless at both.
As am I. However, the next one, and I think it's worth looking at, is stress. stress is bad for you, right? Well, not necessarily. The devil is in the dose and how you perceive the stress. A small burst of stress, such as the rush you get when you run a race, is really good for your body, helping you perform at your best. The adrenaline kick from a stressful moment supercharges your focus so you can attend to the task at hand and do it well. Evidence shows that the way you perceive stress is important too. A Harvard study showed that if you view the signs of stress, such as a pounding heart or sweating, as signs your body is preparing you to meet the challenge, not only will your performance improve significantly, but the impact that stress has on your body is lessened as well. On the other hand, long-term stress, the kind that lasts for months to years, such as when you are a carer or dealing with job insecurity, wreaks havoc on your body and can change or even shrink your brain. Neurons in the brain's memory center, known as the hippocampus, may become disconnected, making it harder to remember events. Stem cells start eating themselves, making the hippocampus shrink. Chronic stress makes us adjust to a hypervigilant and reactive state. The emotion center of the brain, known as the amygdala, grows in size as it increases its connectivity with other neurons, making you more emotional and reactive than you otherwise would be. And lastly, there is increasing disconnect with the prefrontal cortex, the decision-making part of your brain, making it harder to make clear judgments about a situation. While the pressures of modern society may mean you are not always able to avoid stressful situations, you can reframe how you respond to them, as well as reduce the effects of stress on the brain with some activities. So the verdict, a bit is good, a lot not so good.
We're covering lots of subjects today, money, the brain.
And more on money.
Excellent. Let's hear it.
Can I downsize without a pension penalty? Your questions answered by George Cochrane in the Sun Herald. This one is on the 21st of July.
And this is an interesting subject, isn't it?
It
if
is
you're like me, older and not quite as well off as you thought you'd like to be.
Particularly if you're looking at a pension and how to not have a penalty. So, I am a female pensioner in my 70s, widowed and living alone in 5 acres in regional New South Wales. I have no near neighbours and live in a region where crime and home break-ins are escalating. My home has been for sale for some months. While waiting for the property to sell, which could take months or years, I would like to rent and move into a smaller, more secure flat in town. However, I'm told Centrelink will not allow me to rent out my existing home and at the same time use that rental income to pay for my own rental accommodation. Any income I receive from renting my home out would be classed as income and could not be used to offset the rent I would be paying. Rather, it would significantly reduce my pension. It also appears if I rented elsewhere, I would also need to class that new residence as my principal place of residence and have my existing home's value included in my assets, further reducing or nullifying my pension. Incidentally, were I a grey nomad travelling for a year, I read that I would be given 12 months grace before my home would be classed as not my principal place of residence. Albeit, there is no mention of what happens if nomads rented out their home and rented in caravan parks. I assume there's no leeway there. How can I move into secure accommodation for up to a year without being financially disadvantaged? Is there another legal loophole? MG. George Cochrane answers. You are correct in that if you state you intend to move out of your home permanently, you are immediately judged to be a non-homeowner and are subject to a higher assets test limit. However, if you plan to move out only temporarily, then you are classified as a homeowner for 12 months and your home remains exempt, although any rent you receive is counted. A single homeowner loses the pension when her assets exceed $572,000. It's $860,000 for couples, and non-homeowners, $782,000. That is, if your home is counted and is worth more than $210,000, which most are, your pension will drop and possibly cease. You might consider changing your plans and move out of your home for only a year. As the online Social Security Guide states, if you resume occupancy of the home within 12 months and subsequently vacate the home, a new 12-month exemption period begins. However, the guide advises Centrelink personnel that care should be taken to ensure the income support recipient has resumed living in the home and is not establishing a brief period of residence to extend the exemption period. Regarding capital gains tax, you could rent out the home for up to 6 years while renting elsewhere and still sell the property without CGT. If you move back temporarily, the six-year exemption starts again.
Virginia, I think that really is something that does affect a lot of us older ones, and I thank you for that. Now, we're going to change in pace, going to sexuality. It does matter, they're telling us. And this came from the Senior newspaper in May this year, and it was written by Dr. Cindy Jones. It said, sex is often considered a taboo subject in the aged care sector. But Cindy Jones is not afraid of helping to give saucy seniors a leg up. The associate professor from the Bond University said the aged care sector had traditionally taken a preventative approach when it comes to residents having sexual relationships. They viewed it as a potential risk that should be mitigated. She has received funding from the Dementia Australia Group to develop tools to help aged care workers adopt a more personal centre. They'll get a different approach to issues of sexuality and intimacy. Dr. Jones became aware of the issue about 10 years ago while working in a research role between the university and an aged care facility. She said staff were raising issues about inappropriate behaviour. We tend to label behaviours as problematic or challenging. This is a matter that we need to impress to improve the quality of life and their well-being. When the issue was first raised with her, she was a little taken aback, not realising how important sex and sexuality were to older people. But through research and conversations, she realised it was an issue that needed to be addressed. Dr. Jones said a shift was already underway, but there was much to be done to turn policy into practice. She asked, "What is missing at the moment?" Well, having a better conversation about people with cognitive impairments. This is so they can learn to better understand their needs. We should not be stopping these relationships from happening just because they make our work life difficult. Dr. Jones said aged care providers often did not take into account the needs of dementia patients due to stigma. But, quick to point out, the work of psychologist Bernie McCarthy. His positive and negative signs scale uses body language and physical observations. They use this to determine the well-being of people with dementia. Dr. Jones would like to see if it's used to assess the consent of people who are unable to communicate verbally. She is creating a questionnaire to help address the intimacy and sexual needs of clients moving into a new facility.
So I think we can just finish today's program with an item that comes from the Seniors Card newsletter in August, how to stop paying extra for bills you receive in the mail. Are you paying extra for bills you receive in the mail? Service providers may be charging you a fee to cover the cost of printing and posting your bill, but there may be a way you can avoid the charge. The usual way is to switch to online billing and receive your bills by email or via the company's app or website. But some companies also have exemptions from the paper billing fees, and some companies will not charge the fee if customers are seniors, registered for a concession, receive income support, are on a hardship program, and don't have internet access. You need to contact each of your providers and ask if you're eligible for an exemption from paper bill fees and how to apply. If you have friends or family who may be eligible for an exemption, let them know about this too. There may be an added incentive for businesses to exempt you. The Australian government has asked businesses to increase their uptake of fee exemptions by late 2019 or face a possible ban on paper billing fees. If you checked with a provider that you're eligible for an exemption but are having trouble getting your exemption process, contact your local fair trading or consumer affairs agency for help.
Virginia, thanks for that. And just before we go, we'd like to tell you about the Seniors Rights Service. It's a wonderful free service, and they're covering things like consumer rights, human rights, elder abuse, financial exploitation, planning for later life. Now, you can call the Seniors Rights, speak to a lawyer, book a legal information session for your community, all for free. That number, 1-800-424-079. That number again, 1-800-424-079. Well, Virginia Collins, thank you very, very much. It's time for us to go today.
Farewell to you and farewell to the listeners.
Exactly. Boy, didn't we cover some interesting topics today?
Yes.
I thought it was excellent.
Yes.
And those ones about financing, getting a loan, etc.
Very important.
Things like that, yeah, for us older ones. Well, we'll hear from you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Indeed.
Thank you very, very much. Bye. Thank you for being with us too. And don't forget, as always, if you'd like to have any more included in the program or any less, give us a ring here, Sydney 02-9518-8811. Virginia Collins and Dave Jeffrey saying thanks very much for being with us. Look forward to your company again soon. Bye now.